Chapter 29. He called for help, but no one came, and he thought that everyone else had died, and he was the only one left, like the monk, John Clin, in the monastery of the Friars Minor. Aye, waiting for death till it come. He tried to press the button to call the nurse, but he couldn't find it. There was a handbell on the bedstand next to the bed, and he reached for it, but there was no strength in his fingers, and it clattered to the floor. It made a horrible, endless sound, like some nightmarish great tom. But nobody came. The next time he woke, though, the bell was on the bedstand again, so they must have come while he was asleep. He squinted blurrily at the bell, and wondered how long he had been asleep. A long time. There was no way to tell from the room. It was light, but there was no angle to the light, no shadows. It might be afternoon or mid-morning. There was no digital on the bedstand or the wall, and he didn't have the strength to turn and look at the screens on the wall behind him. There was a window, though he could not raise himself up enough to see properly out of it. But he could see it was raining. It had been raining when he went to Brazenose. It could be the same afternoon. Perhaps he'd only fainted, and they had brought him here for observation. "I also will do this unto you," someone said. Dunworthy opened his eyes and reached for his spectacles, but they weren't there. "I will even appoint over you terror, consumption, and burning ague." It was Mrs. Gadsden. She was sitting in the chair beside his bed, reading from the Bible. She was not wearing her mask and gown, though the Bible still seemed to be swathed in polythene. Dunworthy squinted at it. "And when ye are gathered together within your cities, I will send the pestilence among you."
"What day is it?"
Dunworthy asked. She paused, looking curiously at him, and then went on placidly, "And ye shall be delivered into the hand of the enemy." He could not have been here very long. Mrs. Gadsden had been reading to the patients when he went to see Badree. Perhaps it was still the same afternoon, and Mary had not come in to throw Mrs. Gadsden out yet. "Can you swallow?" the nurse said. It was the ancient sister from supplies. "I need to give you a temp," she croaked. "Can you swallow?" He opened his mouth and she put the temp capsule on his tongue. She tipped his head forward so he could drink, her apron crackling. "Did you get it down?" she asked, letting him lean back a bit. The capsule was lodged halfway down his throat, but he nodded. The effort made his head ache. "Good. Then I can remove this." She stripped something from his upper arm.
"What time is it?"
he asked, trying not to cough up the capsule.
"Time for you to rest," she said, peering far-sightedly at the screens behind his head. "What day is it?" he said, but she had already hobbled out. "What day is it?" he asked Mrs. Gadsden.
But she was gone, too. He could not have been here long. He still had a headache and a fever, which were early symptoms of influenza. Perhaps he had only been ill a few hours. Perhaps it was still the same afternoon, and he had awakened when they moved him into the room, before they had time to connect a call button or give him a temp. "Time for your temp," the nurse said. It was a different one. The pretty blonde nurse who had asked him all the questions about William Gadsden.
"I've already had one."
"That was yesterday," she said. "Come now, let's have it down." The first-year student in Badri's room had told him she was down with the virus.
"I thought you had the virus," he said.
"I did, but I'm well again, and so shall you be." She put her hand behind his head and raised him up so he could take a sip of water.
"What day is it?"
he asked. "The 11th,
she said. I had to think a bit. There at the end, things got a bit hectic. Nearly all the staff were down with it, and everyone working double shifts. I quite lost track of the days. She typed something into the console and looked up at the screens, frowning. He had already known it before she told him, before he tried to reach the bell to call for help. The fever had made one endless rainy afternoon out of all the delirious nights and drugged mornings he could not remember. But his body had kept clear track of the time, tolling off the hours, the days, so that he had known even before she told him. He had missed the rendezvous.
There was no rendezvous, he told himself bitterly. Gilchrist shut down the net.
It would not have mattered if he had been there, if he had not been ill. The net was closed, and there was nothing he could have done. January the 11th. How long had Kivrin waited at the drop? A day? 2 days? 3 before she began to think she had the date wrong or the place? Had she waited all night by the Oxford Bath Road, huddled in her useless white cloak, afraid to build a fire for fear the light would attract wolves or thieves, or peasants fleeing from the plague? And when had it come to her finally that no one was coming to get her?
Is there anything I can fetch for you? The nurse asked.
She pushed a syringe into the cannula.
Is that something to make me sleep?
He asked. Yes.
Good, he said,
and closed his eyes gratefully. He slept either a few minutes, or a day, or a month. The light, the rain, the lack of shadows were the same when he woke. Colin was sitting in the chair beside the bed, reading the book Dunworthy had given him for Christmas and sucking on something.
It can't have been that long, Dunworthy thought, squinting at him. The gobstopper is still with us.
Oh, good, Colin said, shutting the book with a clap. That horrid sister said I could only stay if I promised not to wake you up, and I didn't, did I? You'll tell her you woke all on your own, won't you?
He took the gobstopper out, examined it, and stuck it in his pocket.
Have you seen her? She must have been alive during the Middle Ages. She's nearly as necrotic as Mrs. Gadsden.
Dunworthy squinted at him. The jacket whose pocket he had stuck the gobstopper in was a new one. Green. The grey plaid muffler around his neck even grimmer against the verdure. And Colin looked older in it, as if he had grown while Dunworthy was asleep. Colin frowned.
It's me. Colin. Do you know me?
Yes, of course I know you. Why aren't you wearing your mask?
Colin grinned.
Don't have to. And at any rate, you're not contagious anymore. Do you want your spectacles?
Dunworthy nodded carefully so the aching wouldn't begin again.
When you woke up the other times, you didn't know me at all.
He rummaged in the drawer of the bedstand and handed Dunworthy his spectacles.
You were awfully bad. I thought you were going to pack it in. You kept calling me Kivrin.
What day is it?
Dunworthy asked.
The 12th, Colin said impatiently. You asked me that this morning, don't you remember?
Dunworthy put on his spectacles.
No.
Don't you remember anything that's happened?
I remember how I failed Kivrin, he thought. I remember leaving her in 1348.
Colin scooted the chair closer and laid the book on the bed.
The sister told me you wouldn't because of the fever, Colin said, but he sounded faintly angry at Dunworthy, as if it were his fault. She wouldn't let me in to see you, and she wouldn't tell me anything. I think that's completely unfair. To make you sit in a waiting room and they keep telling you to go home, there's nothing you can do here. And when you ask questions, they say, the doctor will be with you in a moment, and won't tell you anything. They treat you like a child.
I mean, you have to find out sometime, don't you? Do you know what Sister did this morning? She chucked me out. She said, Mr. Dunworthy's been very ill. I don't want you to upset him. As if I would. He looked indignant, but at the same time tired, worried. Dunworthy thought of him haunting the corridors and sitting in the waiting room waiting for news. No wonder he looked older. And just now Mrs. Gadsden said I was only to tell you good news because bad news would very likely make you have a relapse and die, and it would be my fault. Mrs. Gadsden's still keeping up morale, I see, Dunworthy said. He smiled at Colin. I don't suppose there's any chance of her coming down with the virus. Colin looked astonished. The epidemic stopped, he said. They're lifting the quarantine next week. The analogue had arrived then, after all Mary's pleading. He wondered if it had come in time to help Badree, and then wondered if that was the bad news Mrs. Gadsden didn't want told. I've already been told the bad news, he thought. The fix is lost, and Kivrin is in 1348. Tell me some good news, he said. Well, nobody's fallen ill for 2 days, Colin said, and the supplies finally came through, so we've something decent to eat. You've got some new clothes as well, I see. Colin glanced down at the green jacket. This is one of the Christmas presents from my mother. She sent them after... He stopped and frowned. She sent me some vids and a set of face plasters as well. Dunworthy wondered if she had waited till after the epidemic was effectively over before bothering to ship Colin's gifts and what Mary had had to say about it. See? Colin said, standing up. The jacket strips up automatically. You just touch the button like this. You won't have to tell me to strip it up anymore. The sister came rustling in. Did he wake you up? She demanded. I told you so, Colin muttered. I didn't, sister. I was so quiet you couldn't even hear me turn the pages. He didn't wake me up, and he's not bothering me, Dunworthy said before she could ask her next question. He's telling me only good news. You shouldn't be telling Mr. Dunworthy anything. He must rest, she said, and hung a bag of clear liquid on the drip. Mr. Dunworthy is still too ill to be bothered with visitors. She hustled Colin out of the room. If you're so worried over visitors, why don't you stop Mrs. Gadsden reading scripture to him? Colin protested. She'd make anybody ill. He stopped short at the door, glaring at the sister. I'll be back tomorrow. Is there anything you'd like? How is Badree? Dunworthy asked and braced himself for the answer. Better, Colin said. He was almost well, but he had a relapse. He's a good deal better now, though. He wants to see you. No, Dunworthy said, but the sister had already shut the door. It's not Badree's fault, Mary had said. And of course it wasn't. Disorientation was one of the early symptoms. He thought of himself unable to punch in Andrew's number, of Mrs. Piantini making mistake after mistake on the handbells, murmuring sorry over and over. Sorry, he murmured. It had not been Badree's fault. It was his. He had been so worried about the apprentice's calculations that he had infected Badree with his fears, so worried that Badree had decided to refeed the coordinates. Colin had left his book lying on the bed. Dunworthy pulled it toward him. It seemed impossibly heavy. So heavy, his arms shook with the effort of holding it open, that he propped the side against the rail and turned the pages, almost unreadable from the angle he was lying at, till he found what he was looking for. The Black Death had hit Oxford at Christmas, shutting down the universities and causing those who were able to flee to the surrounding villages, carrying the plague with them. Those who couldn't died in the thousands. So many there were none left to keep possession or make up a competent number to bury the dead. And the few who were left barricaded themselves inside the colleges, hiding and looking for someone to blame. He fell asleep with his spectacles on, but when the nurse removed them, he woke. It was William's nurse, and she smiled at him. "Sorry," she said, putting them in the drawer. "I didn't mean to wake you." Dunworthy squinted at her.
"Collins says the epidemic's over."
"Yes," she said, looking at the screens behind him. "They found the source of the virus and got the analogue all at the same time, and only just in time. Probability was projecting an 85% morbidity rate with 32% mortality, even with antimicrobials and T-cell enhancement, and that was without adding in the supply shortage and so many of the staff being down. As it was, we had nearly 19% mortality, and a good number of the cases are still critical." He picked up his wrist and looked at the screen behind his head. "Your fever's down a bit," she said. "You're very lucky, you know. The analogue didn't work on anyone already infected. Dr. Ahrens," she said, and then stopped. He wondered what Mary had said. That he would pack it in? "You're very lucky," she said again. "Now try to sleep." He slept, and when he woke again, Mrs. Gadsden was standing over him, poised for attack with her Bible. "He will bring upon thee all the diseases of Egypt," she said, as soon as he had opened his eyes. "Also every sickness and every plague, until thou be destroyed. And ye shall be delivered into the hand of the enemy," Dunworthy murmured. "What?" Mrs. Gadsden demanded.
"Nothing."
She had lost her place. She flipped back and forth through the pages, searching for pestilences, and began reading.
"Because that God sent his only begotten Son into the world."
"God would never have sent him if he'd known what would happen," Dunworthy thought. "Herod and the slaughter of the innocents and Gethsemane."
"Read to me from St. Matthew," he said. "Chapter 26, verse 39.
Mrs. Gadsden stopped, looking irritated, and then leafed through the pages to Matthew.
"And he went a little farther, and fell on his face and prayed, saying, O my Father, if it be possible, let this cup pass from me."
God didn't know where his son was, Dunworthy thought. He had sent his only begotten son into the world, and something had gone wrong with the fix. Someone had turned off the net, so that he couldn't get to him. And they had arrested him and put a crown of thorns on his head and nailed him to a cross.
Chapter 27, he said. Verse 46.
She pursed her lips and turned the page.
"I really do not feel these are appropriate scriptures for..."
"Read it," he said.
"And about the ninth hour, Jesus cried with a loud voice, saying, Eloi, Eloi, lama sabachthani. That is to say, my God, why hast thou forsaken me?"
Kivrin would have no idea what had happened. She would think she had the wrong place or the wrong time, that she had lost count of the days somehow during the plague, that something had gone wrong with the drop. She would think they had forsaken her.
"Well," Mrs. Gadsden said, "any other requests?"
"No."
Mrs. Gadsden flipped back to the Old Testament.
"For they shall fall by the sword, by the famine, and by the pestilence," she read. "He that is far off shall die of the pestilence.
In spite of everything, he slept, waking finally to something that was not endless afternoon. It was still raining, but now there were shadows in the room, and the bells were chiming 4 o'clock. William's nurse helped him to the lavatory. The book had gone, and he wondered if Colin had come back without his remembering. But when the nurse opened the door of the bedstand for his slippers, he saw it lying there. He asked the nurse to crank his bed to sitting, and when she had gone, he put on his spectacles and took the book out again. The plague had spread so randomly, so viciously, the contempts had been unable to believe it was a natural disease. They had accused lepers and old women and the mentally impaired of poisoning wells and putting curses on them. Anyone strange, anyone foreign, was immediately suspected. In Sussex, they had stoned 2 travellers to death. In Yorkshire, they had burnt a young woman at the stake. "So that's where it got to," Colin said, coming into the room. "I thought I'd lost it." He was wearing his green jacket and was very wet. "I had to carry the handbell cases over to Holy Reformed for Miss Taylor, and it's absolutely pouring." Relief washed over him at the mention of Miss Taylor's name, and he realized he had not asked after any of the detainees for fear it would be bad news. "Is Miss Taylor all right, then?" Colin touched the bottom of his jacket, and it sprang open, spraying water everywhere. "Yes. They're doing some bell thing at Holy Reformed on the 15th. He leaned around so he could see what Dunworthy was reading. Dunworthy shut the book and handed it to him.
"And the rest of the bell ringers? Miss Piantini?"
Colin nodded. "She's still in hospital. She's so thin, you wouldn't know her." He opened the book. "You were reading about the Black Death, weren't you?"
"Yes,"
Dunworthy said.
"Mr. Finch didn't come down with the virus, did he?"
"No. He's been filling in as tenor for Miss Piantini. He's very upset. We didn't get any lavatory paper in the shipment from London, and he says we're nearly out. He had a fight with the gallstone over it." He laid the book back on the bed. "What's going to happen to your girl?"
"I don't know," Dunworthy said.
"Well, isn't there anything you can do to get her out?"
"No."
"The Black Death was terrible," Colin said. "So many people died, they didn't even bury them. They just left them lying in big heaps."
"I can't get to her, Colin. We lost the fix when Gilchrist shut the net down."
"I know. But isn't there something we can do?"
"No."
"But I intend to speak to your doctor about restricting your visitors," the sister said sternly, removing Colin by the collar of his jacket.
"Then begin by restricting Mrs. Gadsden," Dunworthy said, "and tell Mary I want to see her."
Mary didn't come, but Montoya did. Obviously fresh from the dig, she was mud to the knees, and her dark curly hair was grey with it. Colin came with her, and his green jacket was thoroughly bespattered. "We had to sneak in when she wasn't looking," Colin said. Montoya had lost a good deal of weight. Her hands on the bed rail were very thin, and the digital on her wrist was loose.
"How are you feeling?" she asked.
"Better," he lied, looking at her hands. There was mud under her fingernails.
"How are you feeling?"
"Better," she said. She must have gone directly to the dig to look for the corder as soon as they released her from hospital, and now she had come directly here.
"She's dead, isn't she?"
he said. Her hands took hold of the rail, let go of it. "Yes."
"Kivrin had been in the right place, after all.
The locationals had been shifted by only a few kilometers, a few meters, and she had managed to find the Oxford Bath Road. She had found Skengate, and died in it, a victim of the influenza she had caught before she went, or of starvation after the plague, or of despair. She had been dead 700 years.
You found it, then?
He said, and it was not a question.
Found what?
Colin said.
Kivrin's quarter.
No, Montoya said. He felt no relief.
But you will,
he said. Her hand shook a little, holding the rail.
Kivrin asked me to, she said. The day of the drop. She was the one who suggested the quarter looked like a bone spur, so the record would survive even if she didn't.
Mr. Dunworthy's worried over nothing, she said.
But if something should go wrong, I'll try to be buried in the churchyard, so you... Her voice faltered. So you won't have to dig up half of England.
Dunworthy closed his eyes.
But you don't know that she's dead if you haven't found the corder, Colin burst out. You said you didn't even know where she was. How can you be sure she's dead?
We've been conducting experiments with laboratory rats at the dig. Only a quarter of an hour's exposure to the virus is required for infection. Kivrin was directly exposed to the tomb for over 3 hours. There's a 75% chance she contracted the virus. And with the limited med support available in the 14th century, she's almost certain to have developed complications.
Limited med support. It was a century that had dosed people with leeches and strychnine, that had never heard of sterilization or germs or T-cells. They would have stuck filthy poultices on her, muttered prayers, and opened her veins. And the doctors bled them, Gilchrist Book had said, but many died in despite. Without antimicrobials and T-cell enhancement, Montoya said, the virus's mortality rate is 49%. Probability, Dunworthy said bitterly. Are these Gilchrist figures?
Montoya glanced at Colin and frowned.
There is a 75% chance Kivrin contracted the virus and a 68% chance she was exposed to the plague. Morbidity for bubonic plague is 91% and the mortality rate is... She didn't get the plague, Dunworthy said. She'd had her plague immunization. Didn't Dr. Ahrens or Gilchrist tell you that?
Montoya glanced at Colin again.
They said I wasn't allowed to tell him, Colin said, looking defiantly at her.
Tell me what? Is Gilchrist ill?
He remembered looking at the screens and then collapsing forward into Gilchrist's arms. He wondered if he had infected him when he fell.
Montoya said, Mr. Gilchrist died of the flu 3 days ago.
Dunworthy looked at Colin.
What else did they instruct you to keep from me?
Dunworthy demanded.
Who else died while I was ill?
Montoya put up her thin hand as if to stop Colin, but it was too late.
Great Aunt Mary,
Colin said. Transcript from the Doomsday Book. Maisie's run away. Roche and I looked everywhere for her. Afraid she'd fallen ill and crawled into some corner, but the steward said he saw her starting into the woods while he was digging Walseff's grave. She was riding Agnes's pony. She will only spread it, or make it as far as some village that already has it. It's all around us now. The bells sound like vespers, only out of rhythm, as if the ringers had gone mad. It's impossible to make out whether it is 9 strokes or 3. Course's double bells tolled a single stroke this morning. I wonder if it is the baby, or one of the chattering girls. She is still unconscious. and her pulse is very weak. Agnes screams and struggles in her delirium. She keeps shrieking for me to come, but she won't let me near her. When I try to talk to her, she kicks and screams as if she were having a tantrum. Eloise is wearing herself out trying to tend Agnes and Lady Hermione, who screams devil at me when I tend her, and nearly gave me a black eye this morning. The only one who lets me near him is the clerk, who is beyond caring. He cannot possibly last the day. He smells so bad we've had to move him to the far end of the room. His bubble has started to suppurate again. Break. Gunny, second son of the steward. The woman with the scrofula scars on her neck. Maisry's father. Roche's altar boy, Cobb. Break. Lady Hermione is very bad. Roche tried to give her the last rites, but she refused to make her confession.
You must make your peace with God ere you die, Roche said.
But she turned her face to the wall and said,
He is to blame for this.
Break. 31 cases. Over 75%. Roche consecrated part of the green this morning because the churchyard is nearly full. Maisry hasn't come back. She's probably sleeping in the high seat of some manor house the inhabitants have fled, and when this is all over, she'll become the ancestor of some noble old family. Perhaps that's what's wrong with our time, Mr. Danworthy. It was founded by Maisry and the Bishop's envoy and Sir Blowett, and all the people who stayed and tried to help, like Roche, caught the plague and died. Break. Lady Hermione is unconscious, and Roche is giving her the last rites. I told him to. It is the disease that speaks. Her soul has not turned against God, I said, which isn't true, and perhaps she does not deserve forgiveness, but she does not deserve this either. Her body poisoned, rotting, and I can scarcely condemn her for blaming God when I blame her, and neither is responsible. It's a disease. The consecrated wine has run out, and there is no more olive oil. Roche is using cooking oil from the kitchen. Smells rancid. Where he touches her temples and the palms of her hands, the skin turns black. It's a disease. Break. Agnes is worse. It's terrible to watch her. Lying there, panting like her poor puppy and screaming, Tell Kivrin to come and get me. I do not like it here. Even Roche can't stand it.
Why does God punish us thus?
He asked me. He doesn't. It's a disease, I said, which is no answer. And he knows it. All of Europe knows it. And the church knows it too. It will hang on for a few more centuries, making excuses, but it can't overcome the essential fact that he let this happen, that he comes to no one's rescue. Break. The bells have stopped. Roche asked me if I thought it was a sign the plague had stopped.
Perhaps God has been able to come to help us after all, he said.
I don't think so. In Tournai, church officials sent out an order stopping the bells, because the sound frightened the people. Perhaps the Bishop of Bath has sent one out as well. The sound was frightening, but the silence is worse. It's like the end of the world. Chapter 30 Mary had been dead almost the entire time he had been ill. She had come down with it the day the analogue arrived. She had developed pneumonia almost immediately, and on the second day her heart had stopped. The 6th of January. Epiphany.
You should have told me, Dunworthy had said.
I did tell you, Colin had protested. Don't you remember?
He had no memory of it at all. Had had no warning, even when Mrs. Gadsden was allowed free access to his room. When Colin had said, they won't tell you anything. It had not even struck him as odd that she hadn't come to see him.
I told you when she got ill, Colin had said, and I told you when she died, but you were too ill to care.
He thought of Colin waiting outside her room for news, and then coming and standing by his bedside trying to tell him.
I'm sorry, Colin.
You couldn't help it, that you were ill, Colin said. It wasn't your fault.
Dunworthy had told Miss Taylor that, and she had not believed him any more than he believed Colin now. He didn't think that Colin believed it either.
It was all right, Colin said. Everyone was very nice except Sister. She wouldn't let me tell you even after you started getting better. But everyone else was nice except the gallstone. She kept reading me scriptures about how God strikes down the unrighteous. Mr. Finch rang my mother, but she couldn't come, and so he made all the funeral arrangements. He was very nice. The Americans were nice, too. They kept giving me sweets.
I'm sorry, Dunworthy had said then, and after Colin had gone, expelled by the ancient sister. I'm sorry. Colin had not been back, and Dunworthy didn't know whether the nurse had barred him from the infirmary or whether, in spite of what he said, Colin would not forgive him. He had abandoned Colin, gone off and left him at the mercy of Mrs. Gadsden and the sister and doctors who would not tell him anything. He had gone where he could not be reached, as incommunicado as Basingham, salmon fishing on some river in Scotland. And no matter what Colin said, he believed that if Dunworthy had truly wanted to, illness or no, he could have been there to help him.
You think Kivrin's dead too, don't you? Colin had asked him, after Montoya left. Like Miss Montoya does.
I'm afraid so.
But you said she couldn't get the plague. What if she's not dead? What if she's at the rendezvous right now, waiting for you?
She'd been infected with influenza, Colin.
But so were you. And you didn't die. Maybe she didn't die either. I think you should go see Badri and see if he has any ideas. Maybe he could turn the machine on again or something.
You don't understand, he said. It's not like a pocket torch. The fix can't be switched on again.
Well, maybe he could do another one. A new fix. To the same time.
To the same time. A drop, even with the coordinates already known, took days to set up. And Badri didn't have the coordinates. He only had the date. He could make a new set of coordinates based on the date if the locationals had stayed the same. If Badri and his fever hadn't scrambled them as well, and if the paradoxes would allow a second drop at all. There was no way to explain it all to Colin, no way to tell him Kivrin could not possibly have survived influenza in a century where the standard treatment was bloodletting.
It won't work, Colin, he said,
suddenly too tired to explain anything. I'm sorry.
So you're just going to leave her there, whether she's dead or not? You're not even going to ask for Dree?
Colin.
Aunt Mary did everything for you. She didn't give up. What is going on in here? The sister had demanded, creaking in. I'm going to have to ask you to leave if you persist in upsetting the patient. I was leaving anyway, Colin had said, and flung himself out. He hadn't come back that afternoon, or all evening, or the next morning.
Am I being allowed visitors? Dunworthy asked William's nurse when she came on duty.
Yes, she said, looking at the screens. There's someone waiting to see you now.
It was Mrs. Gadsden. She already had her Bible open.
Luke chapter 23, verse 33, she said, glaring pestilently at him. Since you're so interested in the crucifixion,
And when they were come to the place which is called Calvary, there they crucified him.
If God had known where his son was, he would never have let them do that to him, Dunworthy thought. He would have pulled him out. He would have come and rescued him.
During the Black Death, the contempts believed God had abandoned them.
Why do you turn your face from us, they had written. Why do you ignore our cries? But perhaps he hadn't heard them. Perhaps he had been unconscious, lying ill in heaven, helpless himself and unable to come.
And there was a darkness over all the earth until the ninth hour, Mrs. Gadsden read. And the sun was darkened.
The contempts had believed it was the end of the world, that Armageddon had come, that Satan had triumphed at last.
He had, Dunworthy thought. He had closed the net. He had lost the fix.
He thought about Gilchrist.
He wondered if he had realized what he had done before he died, or if he had lain unconscious and oblivious, unaware that he had murdered Kivrin.
And Jesus led them out as far as to Bethany, Mrs. Gadsden read, and he lifted up his hands and blessed them. And it came to pass, while he blessed them, he was parted from them and carried up into heaven.
He was parted from them and was carried up into heaven. God did come to get him, Dunworthy thought. But too late. Too late.
She went on reading until William's nurse came on duty. Nap time, she said briskly, shoving Mrs. Gadsden out. She came over to the bed, snatched his pillow from under his head, and gave it several sharp whacks.
Has Colin come? He asked.
I haven't seen him since yesterday, she said, pushing the pillow back under his head. I want you to try to go to sleep now.
Miss Montoya hasn't been here.
Not since yesterday. She handed him a capsule and a paper cup.
Have there been any messages?
No messages, she said. She took the empty cup from him. Try to sleep.
No messages. I'll try to be buried in the churchyard, Kivrin had told Montoya, but they'd run out of room in the churchyards. They had buried the plague victims in trenches, in ditches. They had thrown them in the river. Toward the end, they hadn't buried them at all. They had piled them in heaps and set fire to them.
This ends Side 2 of Cassette 15 of Doomsday Book. Please fast forward to the end before loading Cassette 16.